Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 137, which has a very special meaning. Several of them, actually. The first one is that 137 is the largest prime factor of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Additionally, another reason why 137 is important is that it is the reciprocal of the fine structure constant of electromagnetism, which is actually very close to 137. And throughout his life, physicist Wolfgang Pauli had been preoccupied with a question as to why this fine structure constant has this value. The last reason why 137 is important is that it is the episode number of the CG Garage, where Vlado and Andra, who are the respective brains behind V-Ray and Corona, talk about the incredible news that came out at D2 just yesterday. I recorded this podcast today, and I'm putting it out as an emergency podcast to come out at the next episode. But basically, V-Ray and Corona have actually joined forces in a lot of ways. Render Legion has been is now part of Chaos Group, and we are working together. And we are doing some amazing things. There's been so many questions about what this means and about whether V-Ray is going away or Corona is going away. Both of those answers are no, and a lot of other answers that we will hopefully answer on this podcast. I was going to say, this is normally where we normally in the podcast say, hey, do we have any special announcements out there? I think that's enough of an announcement to give. And there's a lot of questions you guys have. So I think the best thing for us to do is to jump right into it and give you the podcast. But if you do have additional questions, please feel free to add them to the comment section. You guys all know how to do that. Or just go on our Facebook or Twitter or wherever you need to go to continue to ask questions. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more to have out there. We'd love to answer them. All right, guys. Hopefully you enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
All right. Okay. Big news. How long have you been, how long have you guys been sitting on this one?
Yeah, I think the first time we sit on this actually was the last end user event, the one before this year.
Yeah.
So it's well over a year. The initial idea is definitely maybe 1.5 years.
Uh-huh.
But, really, we went into this, really concentrated on this only lately. So it's about half a year, I would say, of intense negotiations and planning and just arranging everything so this can happen.
Right. But it's kind of a big deal. And I think a lot of people obviously have some questions. We know that, and that the general feeling is confusion, right? I mean, honestly, this is something that I think a lot of people have and that people are concerned because they want to see rendering engines as separate competing products because that is a common misconception and the competition makes them feel good in a lot of ways. I don't believe that necessarily. I think actually this made a lot of sense when I heard the news. Just slightly ahead of the public, by the way, which is fine. I thought it made a lot of sense because I think that you guys do really great work and your goals and our goals are similar. So instead of building things twice, why not build it once together and maybe it'll be even better, right?
There's some of, like, it's funny that people get so passionate about rendering and
I'm actually quite flattered that they are passionate about what we do.
Should be flattered
that we can stir such emotions overnight.
Yes, yeah. But it's also an uncomfortable position to be in, right?
Yeah, when the emotions are great, then it's great, but
yeah. But honestly, I think that software development is one of those things where collaboration is way better than just fighting each other to death. Yes. I know people love to watch that. Like you're like a gladiator coming in the arena and one has to survive. But yeah. I don't think that software is like that. And I think that it's a collaborative effort. And the more people work on the same software, obviously, the more ideas we can exchange and the better software comes out and everybody will be happy.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to me. But, you know, of course, I try to see things a little bit more longer distance than short-term thinking, because I think that especially on social media, people love to be able to tell people why the other person's wrong.
Right? Yes.
And this is something that is really hardcore, and you know, taking that away from them is making them upset.
Well, I wouldn't really say that the competition is gone. It's now really internal competition.
Yes.
Because we still have two teams which are geographically separate.
Yep.
And now it's a matter of honor, you know, which team performs the best.
Yeah, but if someone does something that's really cool, you can, instead of trying to copy or recreate or reverse engineer that feature, you guys can just give the code base.
And yeah, I mean,
okay, it'll go faster, right?
I mean, the competition is still there. Just at the end, we will exchange, right. You know, the team that wins can
there,
show the code to
there
the
are, other. There is a distinctive similarities between Corona and V-Ray, but there's also distinctive differences that I think that are important. What would you say is the similarities and the differences that you see between these two renderers? And you guys can each answer that or agree or not agree on it. What do you think are the big differences and similarities between the two products?
Yeah, I can say that Corona started quite different from V-Ray.
Yeah.
But over time, we were actually pressured by a lot of users to approach V-Ray in many senses. So I would say that for us, we started really, really separate, mm-hmm. and then we had to become more alike. So in our office, we have this big board, and there's something called, but it works in V-Ray counter. And every time somebody from our team encounters some feature request or some idea for change, that doesn't really make any sense in the concept that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But the only argument that the guy makes is, yeah, but it works in V-Ray.
Right.
So we make one tick on the board, and it's full of ticks at this point.
Okay.
So the way I see it is that now it's reverse. Now it's not the users who are pushing us into a direction we don't want to go, which is a lot of controls, being software which you need to really learn and master.
Right.
So right now it's reverse. Now we can say to users, you know, but it works in V-Ray. We don't need to add more controls which we feel would really go against the Corona idea. We can say you can use V-Ray. It's compatible. All the materials, all the proxies and lights are supported.
Right.
And the way I see this is that we are now freed from having to compete just tit for tat competition for each version, just adding features just because V-Ray just added some features, and we can now really focus on making Corona the way we always wanted to make it.
This is great. Now, what did you always want to make Corona?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I went on a rant here.
No, this is a good rant. That's
but
perfect.
This is something I wanted to say, because yeah, people say there will be now less choices on the rendering market, and I think it's exactly the opposite, because now Corona and V-Ray will actually not become the same thing, just done by two teams at two locations,
right?
Because the market really wants this. But we can really segregate the market, and we can have Corona really focused on the speed, quality, and ease of use.
Yeah.
And we can leave the advanced controls, which we didn't really want to implement, we can leave this to V-Ray.
What do you think?
It will be up to us to take the most difficult problems, right?
Right. Well, yeah,
in a way.
In a way, but you know what? True, but UX is actually a big thing, right? So Corona has always had a very, very good UX, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And UX is not necessarily a simple problem.
No, I know. And obviously it's not. Like, and this is me saying it, I'm really a programmer, so I'm not a UX guy. And
right.
It shows all over V-Ray.
Right?
And I think that that's fine. And what was most interesting for me when I started doing ray tracing was the actual technology, the way you build the software that produces these kinds of images. Right. And the UI was really, for me at least, and that was, of course, before I worked on this for many years, but for me, the UI was just a way to get to the actual core of V-Ray and experiment with stuff. But anyway, the difference, I guess, between V-Ray and Corona is that V-Ray is just designed to be very extensible, so you can do all these kinds of weird things with it.
Yep.
And it's obviously difficult to develop a software in this way, because the speed is obviously suffers because of that, because you have to support all those different features. And that's fine. It's what makes it interesting. But it's one difference, and it's not, I guess it's not going away, because it's very difficult to build just this software architecture. It can do everything.
Right.
And it will be much more efficient for us and much better for our users if there is just a little bit of focus.
Yeah.
In the same way that you have different applications for doing specific things and they do those things very well. Mm-hmm. Instead of having just one application that tries to do everything in a mediocre way.
Right.
It's I think it's better to have a little bit more focus. And for us, just trying to cover so many different use cases with V-Ray has been a real struggle in the last few years.
Yeah. And going back to Andre's argument of like, but it works in V-Ray, right? We had the same thing for years with, but it works in RenderMan. Right.
There's always something that works somewhere.
Right. Right. Exactly. So the fact is that like people in the visual effects industry were constantly like, but you know, we need deep shadow support, but we need, you know, full Alembic support, but we need, you know, this, you know,
yeah, I know the list is endless.
Multipole, dipole, skin shading, whatever they wanted to do. Right. So, it's always going to be a challenge in some way.
Yes.
And I think this is good. I think that you're right. It's actually what you're saying, in a sense, Andre, is that it's you're actually giving people more choice, because the differences between Corona and V-Ray can actually now be more focused on their own strengths in a lot of ways, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And we're not.
Yeah, basically we are getting back to the speed and usability. We want to remove some sampling parameters to make them fully automatic for the future versions.
Actually, you know what? We're trying to do that in V-Ray too.
Well, I mean, obviously nobody wants to use a super complicated piece of software, but V-Ray would always remain open and programmable.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, for example, you know, we've actually been very good about trying to reset some of the defaults of V-Ray, where you actually don't have to change every single parameter and stuff. So,
yeah.
Okay, well, I want to get that out of the way and sort of feel how, make sure people hear that. But what, I know Vlado's story. We've actually had it a couple times on the podcast, and it's a really good. What inspired you to sort of get into rendering and do this type of thing? What was your backstory?
Yeah, so I started about definitely more than 10 years ago, about 15 years ago when I was about 15. Uh-huh. So I wanted to do 3D as a user. So I tried that. I did some images. So I tried to get some work. Mm-hmm. In the end, I discovered that I could probably somehow get by, but I don't really have the artistic talent for this. So I decided to switch to something else, which was programming. Mm-hmm. So I did programming in the college for a while. And then I somehow realized that you can actually do both. So, and I used V-Ray, actually, the 1.5 something version. Mm-hmm. And I always had a huge respect for V-Ray, because I was around at the time it first came, and it was lights out for Mental Ray and the other renderers. Mm-hmm. So, and I was able to overnight just make better images, because I was able to use V-Ray. I wasn't able to use Scanline or Mental Ray or whatever was
sure
in 3ds Max. And so that was always like my goal, was to actually recreate V-Ray, but not for users, not for the money, just to see if I can make something that will actually look like V-Ray, like if I can make an image that would look like it was done in V-Ray.
Okay.
And so it started as a school
project.
So
your inspiration was V-Ray, in a sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it definitely shows in the first versions of the UI, because we actually had the irradiance cache. We had we had all these things. Before I started experimenting on my own, I basically just took parts of V-Ray and tried to recreate them on my own as a challenge. I did it for a school project, so the first 2 years were just for the school project. Then some users actually wanted to use it, which was quite surprising to me, but I didn't know why they choose it, because it wasn't really good back then, but they did. So that was motivation to just continue. At some point I realized I will be able to make money of this, which means I wouldn't have to have a second job to support it. And that's so I found Adam and Jaroslav, we founded a company, and I guess you probably know the rest.
When was the company founded? Some of the people who listen to this podcast may not necessarily know much about Corona at all. They may know there's a rendering engine. Obviously from the ArcVis community, everyone knows about it, but some other people may not necessarily. So when was the company founded? The
company was founded in 2014.
Okay.
But I think from 2013, I was already working on it full time.
Okay.
And of course it takes some time to start the company, but officially it's 2014, and we started selling in 2015.
And you guys are based in Czechoslovakia, or Czech Republic?
Just Czech Republic.
I'm still old school. Back when I used to live in Europe, it was still Czechoslovakia. So that's how
long ago was that?
I left in '87. So, but yes,
it's Prague basically.
It's Prague.
Everybody knows Prague.
Yeah, it's Prague. Yeah, which is great. So, and how big are you guys now? Before you joined the Chaos Group team, which is now a much larger company.
Yeah, so the company is up to 20 people.
Okay.
Of which about 10 are developers, and then we have, of course, the support guys, marketing, taxes, and so on. So we actually had full offices back in Prague. Mm-hmm. And about three weeks ago, we moved into bigger offices because we are planning basically to double the company in near future.
Right. And when you guys met at EWE a year and a half ago, who approached who? Or is it just like the two of you sort of talking there? Or was it just sort of like, hey, we've got an idea? Or...
Yeah, we had a few beers, I guess. And, this is actually the thing that, based on the preliminary feedback from the internet, this is the thing that people are the most wrong about. It's about who approached who, because it was actually us who approached Chaos Group. Because at the time we were looking for some investors to grow the company.
Yep.
We were not completely satisfied with the rate of growth and so on, because... We did a lot of development, but it just wouldn't show on the usage statistics and sales and so on. So we wanted to expand somehow. And the first thing we thought about was just try to find some investors. And so we did. We got some offers from the biggest VC funds in the region. But they basically only offered money. We realized we need some experience, and we need something else than money. We need somebody who has experience about doing marketing, about doing sales, about positioning the products and so on. And at some point we realized that actually Chaos Group would be the best partner possible which we could choose.
Right, because we've studied the rendering business for a long time.
Because the two companies, it's basically the same story, started in different countries 10 years apart.
Right.
It's like Peter said yesterday, we have the same DNA. That's basically it.
Right.
So we were actually also surprised the first time we realized that this would make sense.
Yeah.
So we went through this surprise phase about 1.5 years ago.
So
we just approached Vlado at the end user event after a few beers and just put it on the table like, hey, would you like to talk about something else? And
right.
And it just went on from there.
When they approached you, what was your sort of general feeling?
It was like I've been following the development of Corona for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was impressed with the work that Andrea did. It was just because it's not easy to write a render engine, and we've been doing it for many years, so I know exactly how hard it's going to be. And the progress that they made was really impressive. And I've always felt that it would be a lot better if there's a way for us to work together with those guys, because it's in the field of rendering is not really that big, and it's difficult to find people that can understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, and for me, it's always been a struggle. And that's why I've always thought that at working with people like the Corona team would be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we basically started the conversation. That was my interest in it.
Right.
I love rendering. I love to do software and produces nice images.
Sure.
And anything that can help me do that is welcome.
Right.
So that was my interest. And I think that working with smart people is always better than making those people fight each other.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's there's a, listen, there's always going to be a benefit to competition, right? And
well,
and there's
yes,
no, and we continue, well, hold on, let me finish. there is still competition. There is, yes. Absolutely, there's still competition. That, and you mentioned that the field of rendering is very small, but yet, since it even though it's small, there's actually a ton of competition.
Yes.
Which is kind of also unique. So there's obviously still a lot of rendering engines out there that are creating things that are competitive and looking at it. You know, there's other solutions that we look at, that, you know, for example, you know, companies like Maxwell and Manuka are looking at, you know, spectral rendering in certain ways. And this is something that we're not necessarily interested in, but that seems as an interesting competitive analysis of which one works better in certain cases. Right.
Yeah.
So, I think that there's a lot of benefits to merging, certain code and ideas that have, you know, like we said, the similar DNA, right? So what are some of the other things that you guys see as benefits to the two companies coming together?
It makes researching new things a little bit easier.
Sure.
There are tons of stuff that I want to try out, but I couldn't because I had to do other things that people wanted from V-Ray. And now I will have a little bit more freedom to experiment with things.
Right.
Because when you write a render, you obviously have to try new things. It doesn't mean necessarily that everything that you write is going to be successful in the end.
Right.
So having a little bit more time and freedom to experiment,
mm-hmm,
is something that I'm really looking forward to.
Right. But do you think, like, can you give us specific examples of some of the things that you guys have already done? Because we've talked about that in the announcement a little bit, but I think it'd be good to reiterate that. So
it's been funny because now we can compare notes and see how we solve the same problems.
Right.
In a different way. It doesn't mean always that you can take a solution from one place and put it into the other and it will work, but mm-hmm, it can be a very good inspiration.
But you've already... True, but you actually exchanged specific, yes, ideas, right? So, like, so tell me some of the examples of some of the things that have exchanged and actually gone into products that people weren't necessarily aware of right away, right?
Yeah, so the first huge success which we have is the DMC sampler.
Right.
So we are comparing the notes on the sampling, and we, of course, know that V-Ray has this DMC thing, but we never knew what it actually meant.
Right.
So, and we discovered it's actually a really compact piece of code, which could be easily implemented into Corona.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried it, and the result just, I guess, surprised everybody, because we were expecting some improvement,
mm-hmm,
but I was expecting, like, if it would be 15%, that would be so great. But it turned out to be 50 to 100% speed up.
Right. So double the speed.
Yeah.
Right.
In the right scene, and I don't mean some artificial scene, but I mean in some of the production scenes,
mm-hmm,
the speed up is basically double.
Right. Well, that's a significant speed difference, right?
Yeah, it's actually so significant that we decided to release this, to backport this into the older stable version we released,
mm-hmm,
just so everybody can use this, not only the people who are on the fast development track and using daily build, but also people that use the stable versions.
Right. So people who basically are already using Corona now, using the stable versions of Corona, are already using pieces of V-Ray code. They just didn't know about it.
They've been using it for a month. They didn't know it. We just called it something like the new and improved sampler.
Right.
but basically it's the V-Ray technology.
Right. And what's some of the code base that you were looking at in terms of Corona that was interesting to you and you were trying to look at?
Corona had a very nice improvement in the sampling of image-based lights a few releases ago, and it's something that we can relatively easily implement in V-Ray, so that's something that we want to do.
Okay.
There is also a specific way to sample mesh lights that would be very helpful for our GPU renderer.
Oh, right.
And I think Blog already posted some results on Facebook. Looks right. Really promising.
Well, that's interesting because you guys don't even do a GPU render, but yet somehow what you guys are doing for the GPU, what you guys are doing is helping on our GPU team in some ways as well, huh?
Yeah, it's basically the result of just randomly comparing notes on how to solve different problems.
And right.
Then you found out that the solution that the one team is using for the CPU doesn't fit the CPU solution of the other team, but it actually fits their GPU solution.
Right. That's really interesting. I think that there's a lot of good things that are happening. Now, let's just talk about specifically, you guys are a CPU-based renderer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you'll probably stay like that for a while at this point, because obviously you've learned the lessons that writing a GPU render, you kind of have to start from scratch. It's a little bit tougher, right? So, but I think that the fact that something I brought up the other day is a lot of people seem to say, as an example, that Corona is faster than V-Ray, just philosophically speaking, right? They think this, but now suddenly you introduced a V-Ray code sampling into Corona and it's twice as fast. So V-Ray isn't actually a fast renderer in a lot of ways. But I think what people experience because of your philosophy on Corona as a specific example, where you want to keep the UI and the experience very simple, by keeping it very simple, the experience is generally faster, even though the rendering may not necessarily be as fast, conceptually speaking.
Rendering is fast.
The rendering is fast, but it's faster. It's faster now, but
you can. But for any two renderers, you can find a scene where the result shows what you want to show.
Yeah. So comparing
render speed is just we had a really bad experience about this with our first benchmark where we released the scene we used and then people just took it as a competition to beat the time in their favorite renderer. So we learned a hard time not to give people opportunity to do this.
I can take any renderer and make it a 72-hour render, no problem.
Yeah, we know that.
I remember one of the comparisons. Corona was actually not included in that one because the guy doing the comparison didn't think it was significant. Mm-hmm. But I remember there was V-Ray render which took about 60 minutes, and I remember Vlado posting 2-minute render of the same scene,
right,
looking much better.
Right, I've done that myself. Yeah, I know Vlado sometimes takes it personally when someone basically says it's wrong. I remember actually, you know, Vlado did a really great video back when some of our users have been struggling a little bit with legacy, especially in a mindset. They're trying to think of how they used V-Ray 10 years ago and they haven't changed the way that they use it in 10 years. And so he posted a video where, you know, I think it was since the at least 3.2 or something like that, where he says a lot of people are complaining about a scene rendering slow, and here's what I usually do when it solves 95% of the problems. And he showed the video where he basically says you take your scene and here's how you reset all your V-Ray settings back to default, and then you hit render and see how much better it is.
Yeah, but then that means that most of the settings are probably should not be there.
Well, yes, or most people shouldn't mess with the settings. It's true. But I did the same thing for a friend of mine who had this, and he was very much operating in a way that was different. But there is okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about legacy, the problem of legacy software, right? Or legacy settings in a way. How do you struggle with that?
Well, we struggle with it.
Yeah.
Obviously. It's a difficult problem that luckily the Corona team doesn't have.
Right.
But
not yet. Well, there's still a young rendering engine.
We have some legacy. Yeah. Some people are still using the 1.1 version because they claim that we made some changes in BRDF that right. they don't like, and they are expecting bug fixes or new features backported into this random version they picked.
Okay.
And it's not really if you handle legacy or not, it's just the amount of legacy you need to handle.
Right. So what is the best way to handle legacy?
I don't know if I knew, I would tell you, but I don't.
But you do hide features every now and then.
Yeah, we obviously simplifying things and making the render itself smarter. That's one way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that we just can't remove right now because people are using them still. Right. And we'll be using them for some time. But it's definitely, we need, when we plan ahead the development, we kind of figure which features eventually we want to drop or deprecate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we think is the best way to move forward instead of just trying to pile more and more stuff on it.
Right.
At some point, you also have to start cleaning it up.
Well, it's interesting. There was someone that was mentioning earlier, I forgot where it was, where someone said linear workflow, right? As an example, the linear workflow checkbox.
Yeah, let's not get there. It's a complicated issue.
Those types of things where you're basically saying, listen, here's the other problem is we talked about this on the podcast before. When V-Ray was first written, it was written on that we're on hardware that's slower than your current iPhone, right? And so we had to have solutions out there to be able to make those things faster. And if you're supposed to do, you know, like really good global illumination, you have to optimize some of those things. So that's another thing that's happened is obviously the hardware has gotten faster. How have you responded to hardware changes? What do you guys think about some of the hardware changes that are happening and how that's going to affect your rendering? And especially things like the new, have you tried the new AMD Threadripper? The Threadripper thing?
We haven't tried them personally, but we have the Corona benchmark.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can test your hardware and submit the results. So we have the times for the Threadripper,
mm-hmm.
and the times are basically the same as my dual Xeon machine.
On a single.
With one CPU.
Right. Yeah, and
that's impressive.
It's quite impressive. How much is the Threadripper? Do we know anything about it? I mean, I don't know how much the pricing is.
It's $899, I think.
Oh,
the,
wow. So it's
the fastest one.
That's fairly reasonable.
So that's a huge boost for CPU rendering, basically.
Yeah. And have you guys considered looking at GPU rendering or some of the benefits of that has to offer?
We are aware of GPU rendering.
Right.
And the problem is that it's not a half-year project. It's way longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just doing it without knowing the end result.
Yeah.
Is very dangerous.
Right.
So right now we can actually ask Vlado,
mm-hmm.
what are his experience, what are the expectations and the complexities and so on.
Right.
So this will help us make informed decision in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right now the decision we made is that we will not be developing GPU renderer in the nearest future.
Okay.
But what we are looking at is doing some other parts of the rendering process on GPU.
So denoiser process.
Yeah, the denoiser is the one thing where it would probably be huge speed up.
Right.
But also, for example, the post-processing.
Right.
Because we still do all the post-processing on CPU.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, we are always able to somehow optimize it for it to be fast.
Right.
But for example, the quality of the lens effect,
mm-hmm.
is fairly limited right now by what is fast on the CPU.
Right.
So we are hoping by porting the post-processing to GPU,
mm-hmm.
we could get even faster response time for any change that the user makes.
Right.
And we can, for example, increase the quality of the lens effect or add more effects.
Right.
So this is something that we will be looking into, and some of our programmers are really anxious to just try this because they are looking forward to this.
Okay. What about some of the other things that you guys are doing in terms of post-processing, because I've always been interested in the post-process that you guys do. There's always been something about a Corona render that looks a little bit more processed. I don't want to say that. I don't mean that in a bad way. I actually mean it in a really good way. That looks a little bit more photographic in the processing of it, right? If you look at a raw Corona render, that all seems to do that. So how, tell us a little bit about that.
To be honest, I have no idea what is causing this. And users were always saying this, that that they feel there is something in the Corona renderers that the V-Ray renderer doesn't have. Mm-hmm. And they will even say that they cannot say what it is, or they cannot tell it from the picture, but it's just there.
Right.
And
do you guys have depth of field on all the time?
No.
Really?
You need to enable it.
Okay.
But for us, there's nothing we know about which we would do differently from V-Ray at this point.
Right.
And our best guess is that just by default we enable some of the options that make the image better, like full. We try to do some GI caustics, mm-hmm. only but very limited. We do the reflect on the back face mm-hmm. for glass and so on. Mm-hmm. But people were telling us for many years that the images somehow look better, and we don't see it because I'm a programmer. I don't see the difference.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I'm sure there's a, you know, there's something about it. You know, when you taste two wines and you know one is newer, then it's gonna, you think it tastes better than the other one. But that's sort of the idea there.
Actually, there is a game that I like to play. So there is this website called VW World.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they have these various projects and I'm trying to guess which projects are done with V-Ray and which ones are done with Corona. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to. It's hard, and sometimes I guess, sometimes I don't.
But I was able to tell in the beginning because Corona had some specific bugs or was missing some specific features. So when I saw an image that had, I don't know, anisotropy in it, I knew it is not Corona because it doesn't have anisotropy.
Right, right,
but,
right.
But this is really impossible lately.
Right.
So my best guess lately is, we have the community on the forum. It's a really great community that shares a lot of images and mm-hmm. the gallery is super active. Mm-hmm. So when somebody does something new, like beautiful photorealistic renders of food, mm-hmm. then the other renders of food I see randomly on the internet. Mm-hmm. There's a big chance it's done in Corona.
Right.
Just because the community was inspired by the original food. One.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The other big thing, obviously, you know, you were talking about all the things that people want. They say that it works in V-Ray. But one of the things that we've gotten a lot of things that people want to do is the light mixer, right? You guys have a light mixer, which is a really amazing feature that a lot of people want to do. Can you give people an idea who may not necessarily have used Corona what the light mixer is?
Okay, so the light mixer basically means that every light is rendered into small separate frame buffer.
Okay.
And you can pick which light goes into which frame buffer, or you can just have it automatically, so mm-hmm. each light is completely separate. Mm-hmm. And then you render, and during the render or after the render, or even when you save the image and open it with the editor later, mm-hmm. you can change the intensities and colors of the lights.
Right. Because lights are additive.
So you can change the mood of the image, you can change the color tint, but only for specific lights.
Right.
And or you can just take a day render and make it into night render,
right?
Which is, it's extreme, but it's possible to do,
right? But does the light mixer actually do the full contribution of that light, including reflections and GI?
Yeah, it's full. We tested this and it's exactly the same. We actually have the feature, the option to bake the changes back into the scene.
Okay.
So if you decide to color one light and change the intensity of second light, mm-hmm. you do the render with the light mix. Mm-hmm. Then you press the bake into the scene button.
And it'll take whatever the setting is and apply it to the actual light.
It will apply to the light. Mm-hmm. And or if it's a material, it will go through the output node with the same change. Mm-hmm. And then if you render again, you will get basically exactly the same image. There are some small changes based on some technicalities.
You won't necessarily get the same image because the sampling will be different, right?
Well, there is stuff like sampling and GI clamping and
right.
But other than that, it will be the same image.
Right, exactly. And that's the point, is actually that sometimes when you do those changes, that your sampling may not, you know, if you take a light that's very, very dim and you make it really much, much brighter, it's going to be grainy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So if you do that and it's like, yeah, I want about this intensity, but now I need to re-render to make sure that the sampling is better and I have a higher quality render. So that's the...
Yeah, idea. But if you make small changes, and by small, I mean, for example, increasing the intensity only 5 times, mm-hmm. then it's probably okay to just use the render directly.
Right. What I used to do, because we used to do similar things back when I worked in VFX, I always used to say, it's like, it's better to light something that's a little bit brighter than normal than it's too dark, because we can, if we change it in post-processing, we can basically do that. And it's easier because you won't have as much grain involved to do that. So what are some of the great projects that have happened in Corona since you got involved, that you've been proud of? Some of the things that your users have done.
You mean projects done by our users?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a tough question because I don't know what I'm allowed to talk about and what not.
Okay.
But yeah, the one that comes to mind is the Rolls-Royce concept of the new Rolls-Royce self-driving electromobile.
Oh, really?
Which was, it has 360-degree video rendered in Corona.
Oh, okay.
It was done by the Rewind Studio.
Uh-huh.
There is also other car manufacturers, some airlines, for example, some movies.
Uh-huh.
So Corona was used actually in Hobbit.
Oh, in The Hobbit? Really?
Yeah.
By who?
If
you can say.
This is actually not public, but one of the guys who worked on the movie,
okay,
decided to show some of the work he did for this.
Oh,
it's,
really?
It's for the background shots.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, but obviously Corona is most well known in the community of ArcViz and architecture, right?
Yeah.
And that's why do you think that is? What do you think? Why do you think Corona is so well suited for that industry?
Well, it was just kind of natural in the beginning because it's a really huge community.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not as hungry for features as, for example, the VFX mm-hmm. community. What they really want is that fast, easy to use render. They will just, every time they press render, they will get a nice image without any fuss.
But they want high quality too out of the box, right? They want really good GI, for example, right?
Yeah, that's it. They want good GI, which you don't have to set up.
Right.
It's just there automatically. And you don't ever need to worry about this. So it was really the natural fit in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other communities started asking us questions when we will implement this or that. So
right.
So actually lately, for the new version, which will be out in about 1 month,
mm-hmm.
we decided to make the push for the VFX.
Mm-hmm.
So we are cooperating with Chaos Group for the hair and skin rendering, which will be released.
Oh, okay. So you guys are going to incorporate hair and skin, right?
Yeah.
Which is great. Maybe we should see if I can render the WikiHuman project in Corona. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Will you? Hey, how hard would it be for... Okay, if you're going to do that, since the AL surface shader is actually an open source shader, would that be possible for to go into Corona as well?
Yeah, this is one of the hottest candidates we are looking at.
Oh, okay. Then that's perfect. Then I will totally render our WikiHuman in Corona and see what the results are and how that looks, which will be...
Yeah, but for example, awesome. for the hair shader, we did something custom.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't directly use this AL stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And based on some feedback from some of the famous users, it actually looks even better than this.
Oh, than the AL hair shader?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're actually looking at, I mean, I think Vlado, you mentioned it a little bit.
We've been looking for a new hair shader for a while, so that's coming at some point.
Right.
It will be, like many other things, interesting to compare.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think it'll definitely be interesting to see what the differences are. Okay, well that's good to know. I'm really looking forward to it. And you, because of what you've done, why do you think it's been an interest of yours to get into the visual effects stuff? Because obviously when you get into the visual effects stuff, you may need to sort of make things more complicated, shall we say, right?
Well, it's not necessarily true. It's right. What most people think is that if you want to go to the VFX, you need to make it more complicated. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, people were also saying, if you want to make photorealistic images, you need to set up, need to know how to set up all the samplers and and all the GI pre-computation methods and so on.
Right.
And we somehow proved them wrong. So maybe it will happen again. What we are doing, basically, I would call it, it's an exploration.
Okay.
We have people asking us for 2 or 3 years at this point to add the skin and hair shader. Mm-hmm. And they are saying they are ready to jump onto Corona when doing their VFX because they, for example, tried Corona on some architecture-focused project and they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to use the same for the VFX.
Mm-hmm.
So what we are doing now is an exploration where we give them the first version of the VFX features, and we will see if they actually stick to it and if they are actually able to use it to create something nice.
Right.
And if the feedback is positive, we can just continue with this.
Okay. Well, that's great. So since that sort of sets up with some of the ideas of what you have on some of your short-term goals, do you guys have a general idea? I know you can't necessarily share it all the time, but general idea of what some of the long-term goals could be that you guys want to think about?
Yeah, we can. I can talk in generally, which is really just continue the trends of removing unnecessary controls and making the rendering faster and better. And if I go into specific details, I have a few options in Corona, basically targeted for elimination, which are the last I think 3 or 4. Multipliers or sampling parameters in the UI.
Right.
And what I would like to do is to have caustics, to make caustics mainstream.
Mainstream.
Because right now you don't think of caustics as an integral part of the scene,
right,
as something natural. It's something you add on top of the render.
Right. It's a choice you make.
It's some artificial effect you need to consciously put into the scene by setting it up.
Right.
But what I'm imagining would be the best possible scenario is if just caustics are just there. Mm-hmm. If you do the scene in a way that it generates caustics, they will be there, and you don't really need to think of them as something different.
Let's ask this, since you brought up the idea of just having caustics being part of it. What is your opinion of biased versus unbiased?
this term really lost any meaning.
Right.
It's a... You know, bias versus unbiased is the same as the beer of the year.
Right.
So every beer is the beer of the year, and every renderer is unbiased.
Right.
So we can talk about it from the scientific perspective, where no renderer is unbiased, really.
Right. No renderer is unbiased. Yeah. It's interesting because I wrote a blog post about this specifically, and there used to be a Facebook group called Unbiased Rendering. and they would basically have Corona and then V-Ray RT at the time and other things in there. And I said, you know, that's not. And then I basically could recommend, they've now changed the name of that Facebook group to call it Progressive Rendering.
because that's basically it in the eyes of the users. It's what should be called just progressive rendering is called unbiased rendering.
Right. But in terms of progressive rendering, there's actually, you know, something interesting that I've been learning from Vlado in terms of certain specific kind of features or ideas. Progressive rendering actually does have some issues in terms of, like, bucket rendering can actually be an advantage in certain areas compared to progressive rendering, especially when it deals with RAM and things that have a lot of stuff in
there. It's like with everything, there are pros and cons, right?
Right.
So there are different approaches to the same thing, and for the moment, we found that bucket rendering has some advantages, progressive rendering has other advantages, so it's not, it's a mixed bag there, right now.
There's a funny story about the bucket rendering, so we had it in the beginning, because as I said, it was basically recreating of what V-Ray has, and that at some point I did the progressive renderer, and I discovered it's actually much simpler to maintain, and the result looks better.
Right.
So at some point we decided to drop the bucket rendering, but since then we have this weird, let's say, cult of bucket formed in our community.
You have a what?
A cult of bucket rendering.
Okay.
So there are some people who, for some reason,
Would it be a cult of bucket? This is what's wrong with the rendering community. The cult of bucket rendering.
For some reason, they want to bring it back because they think it was better in some way, which nobody can really explain.
Okay.
And as I was reading the reactions to the big news, mm-hmm. there was a lot of different reactions. But what was the most funny reaction was this: members of this cult actually they sense opportunity now, so they started asking. So V-Ray is of course the bucket renderer. So
it is. Okay. I thought of Mental Ray, but.
But. So they are asking now if we will bring the bucket rendering back.
Okay. yeah.
But I wouldn't really say that, the opposite of progressive rendering is not bucket rendering, because, for example, Arnold has bucket rendering, and it's definitely...
But isn't it kind of like progressive buckets?
Yeah. but the thing about progressive rendering is that you don't wait before the render starts,
right?
So there's not a long pre-computation phase in the beginning,
right?
And the second part of progressive rendering is that the image just gets better,
right.
Because with bucket you set the quality. Sorry, not with bucket, but with non-progressive GI algorithms,
mm-hmm.
you set the quality in the beginning and you say I want to achieve this quality.
Yeah,
it will take some time to pre-compute,
mm-hmm.
and then it will go through the entire image and you have the result and you cannot improve it.
Right.
But with progressive rendering, with progressive algorithms,
mm-hmm.
you can set the image quality. Mm-hmm. It immediately starts rendering. It reaches the quality,
mm-hmm.
and then you can say, yeah, I want a bit better quality. So you continue from that point on.
We can do that too in V-Ray.
Yes, I'm not saying V-Ray is not a progressive renderer.
This is great. See, this is what you mean by internal competition, where we can do this.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. But yeah, there is ways of basically doing resumable rendering, obviously, in certain ways. Do you guys have resumable rendering? Have you considered
Sorry?
It? Do you have resumable rendering?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we had it first. Yes.
Right. Oh, yes, yeah. That's right. I do remember that. Right. Okay. And as a progressive render, that's actually impressive, because I know that's a more challenging thing to solve in certain ways, right? In some ways.
In some ways, yeah.
All right. Okay. We are now just about an hour, and we've covered a lot of stuff, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of interest from our users to find out exactly where this is all going. So I will... I'm going to basically... I'm going to use an old term that I used to use at the beginning of the podcast, Vlado. You remember how I used to close the podcast?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to let the last bucket drop. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. So sorry, we're going into the encore extra time minutes here. But Vlado basically said, you know what? I want to talk about a couple of extra things here. So what else is... What are some of the things that you want to address that's come out?
Well, obviously, people are wondering what's going to happen to Corona. So the one thing that will happen is that it will stay around.
Right.
For the foreseeable future.
Right.
It's like I said, it's very difficult to have just one renderer that can do everything. So I think there's a place for both engines,
mm-hmm.
To focus on different areas. And... V-Ray stays V-Ray, Corona stays V-Ray.
Corona stays Corona. Although I will hear that someone got disappointed that we didn't announce it last week, back when the eclipse was happening in the United States, because Corona and eclipse.
We actually used this for the website update. So we said, you know, the sun is not... it's temporarily not visible, so our website is temporarily not not functioning.
Okay, so go ahead. What are some of the other questions?
But anyway, development continues as normal.
Yep.
So we have a pile of stuff to work on. There are a bunch of stuff to work on for Corona. So development goes on at full speed. It will be obviously more exciting for us, because we'll be able to exchange some knowledge to make both products better.
Yeah.
And this will be an ongoing thing. Like, it's not just one time.
Right.
And the other thing that people were worried on, that we're going to put X amount of zeros to the price of Corona, that's not going to happen.
Right.
We realized that prices are this way because it makes sense. So we don't plan to change that.
Yeah, Corona is successful based on several factors, including its price, right?
Yes. So
yeah, the price is really just the important integral part of the solution.
It's right. So the value of Corona definitely comes from both its quality and its price in a lot of ways.
And that's basically our plan. Obviously, people will choose to believe us or not, but I hope that we will prove this in the future with the way we actually carry on the development.
Sure. I think it's, you know, it's philosophically, it's up to us to prove them wrong.
Yes.
And I think that they will get there eventually once they understand that. So, anyway, I appreciate it. Is there anything else that you want to address to the users that you've heard back, Andre?
Yeah, I would just add to Vlados that it's really a motivation to keep going to prove some of the people who did not react well to the news,
right?
To prove them wrong.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I think, I mean, we talked about it a little bit in the beginning of the podcast, but we can recap. You know, some people are so adamant about being from one side or the other. And when those two sides merge, it makes them confused and a little bit angry because they can't necessarily have their position that they've adamantly sat on for so long. In a sense, we haven't taken that away from them in a lot of ways, because what we've just said is that both products are going to stay separate because they're focusing on their different areas, right?
I think some people have the wrong impression about the way our two companies did business before, mm-hmm. which is one of the stories I was just telling to Vlado, is that when we were at one of the conferences and I asked him a question after his talk, mm-hmm. there were some people in the back who just started panicking because they thought that we will just fight on stage.
Right.
And they said something like, oh my God, they hate each other. And but it was never the case. You know, when I was going to conferences, I was always looking to have a beer with Vlado,
right?
After the talks.
Yep. I've got pictures of Vlado with Phil Miller hanging out, you know, guys, one of the guys created IRA, you know, and Vlado and Marcos that were hanging out at the Oscars together when they got their SciTech awards. So there's...
Yeah. And of course, also the other renderer developers, which I spoke with, Marcos from Solid Angle and the guys from IRA, they are also very friendly. I would say the community of developers is really much friendlier than the people on the internet think.
Yeah, well, you guys share the same passion. You should be passionate about it, right? So, yeah, absolutely. I think it's good. And... I'm glad you brought it up. Is there any other concerns we want to do before we close out, Lada?
No, I think that's it, basically.
Well, it's difficult to cover all the fears because basically the only thing we left out of the announcement was the price. Mm-hmm. So people were just systematically going like, are they going to kill it? They say they will not kill it. So are they going to cripple it? They said they will not cripple it. So,
right.
But they said nothing about prices.
Right.
So of course the price will go a million times up.
Yeah.
Now we say, you know, the price level is staying the same.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately now somebody will think about the next thing,
right,
which we did not explicitly say will not happen.
Well, we can address them one by one. That's why we have blog posts and comment sections we can answer.
So we need to do some kind of progressive podcast. Just iterate it.
Well, I will say, you know, now that we're on the, you know, all on the same team and stuff, that you should, you know, next time you come to LA, obviously you can come to our office and look at some of the things going on over there. But we should also consider, you know, you should be on our, every Monday we have our labs call and we come up with where I say, I've got a crazy idea. And Vlado says, that's crazy. Maybe you should do something else. Or sometimes he goes, yeah, that's a really good idea. I think that's what you should do. But you should be on those lab calls now, which I think would be really fun to have you on and sort of be part of the crazy ideas that happens.
Sure.
From there.
Sounds great.
Okay. Well, cool. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, see you.